Let's see if I can do this in a one taker. One take wonder. No edit. Just an intro. Just a normal, cool intro. Couple of plugs. Tell you what's going on. Tell you who the guest is. It's going to be great. Starting from now. Hello, everyone. I am staying true to my word, which is view content. Constant content. Constant, I call it. I'm going to give you an episode, two episodes a month. That's what I'm doing. That's what's been happening. I've been having errors with equipment, but I have used a credit card to fix those errors. Also with the help of people, the lovely people at Rode. Not a plug, but they did help me out with a couple of issues I was having. And now we can continue with the new video, mostly video episodes. You might be watching this early on the Patreon. It's only £1. What do you mean it's only £1? It's only £1. And what does that do? Well, that allows me to buy cameras and shit so we can do this. Well, what else do I get for £1? Well, you might be watching the video version of this early, or you might be awaiting the new Downbeat products. The cool vintage t-shirts that feel like they're like 100 years old, 30 years old, and look like a cool band, but actually it's a podcast. So when someone goes, well, it's not even a podcast, really, it's a brand, isn't it? Certainly not a drum podcast. Someone goes, well, that's a cool t-shirt, name three songs. Well, I'll name three episodes. How about that, motherfucker? Well, yeah, so, you know, if you're not on the Patreon, you can just go to www.thedownbe.at, so it spells Downbeat, and just pick one up there. Anyway, there's new stuff. There's shorts, there's basketball jerseys, hopefully, T-shirts, hoodies, coffee cups. Sort of like Supreme, but marginally less Supreme. My guest, going well, isn't it? My guest this week is Pat Sheridan from Fit for an Autopsy. Making Fit for an Autopsy, the only band other than Architects to have more than two members. We've had Hosian, we've had Will, now we've got Pat. Pat made a brief appearance at the end of Tom Williams from Straight From The Past episode. They were playing in Glasgow. I had to get him back in. He's got a past. We delve into that. Trigger warning. There's some horrible shit in his childhood. We talk about that. It was fun, but it was very serious. That bit wasn't fun. It was very serious. He owns a tattoo shop, right? Other than being the guitarist and Fit for an Autopsy, he owns a tattoo shop, which was a little bit crippled from COVID. We talked about what it's like working. I nearly messed up there, nearly an edit. What it's like working with Will Putney, which is something I talk about all the time. Having to play Will Putney's riffs, which Will Putney doesn't have to play, really, he just sits down and plays them, and then Pat has to be the person to play them whilst rocking TF out. That was about it. It's in person. You might be watching it on YouTube or on the Patreon. I did a multicam edit. If you're on the Patreon, sorry to keep plugging it. It pays now for me to do stuff like sit and learn how to do multicams. That's only going to get better. Let me know what you think. It's Pat Sheridan on the Downbeat Podcast. That's how I start. There are four different backups running.
Four.
Because I've fucked this before. So we've got one in the camera, one on the computer, one on each of our microphones, and one on that Rodecaster Pro thing there.
Sometimes you're going to make sure all bases are covered.
Because the last time I did this, I did it with Aaron Gillespie. It was a huge, huge episode for me.
And then?
And I fucked it. I was like, you know what? I won't do the backups. It's going to be fine. And I completely destroyed it.
Yep. Well, I mean, live and learn, brother.
Pat.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you doing in Glasgow?
Making music, finally, for the first time in like 3 years.
Is this the first...
This is the second tour, first European tour since COVID.
What was the...
Last one was the Artist Murder Carnifex tour that we did in Europe, UK.
Did you have to go home on that tour?
No,
was it real
the
close?
The next tour, we were direct support to the IRA in the States. So we were in Europe January, February, I believe 2019, I want to say it was. Maybe 2020? 2020.
Yeah, it would have been 2020. We did a
2019. I'm confusing dates. So it was 2020. We all got... I'm allowed to say whatever.
You can
right?
say fucking. You can say cunt on this one.
Ooh, I like
you can
that.
Say whatever you want.
Fucking sick. Like me and Marshy disappeared, and then I got sick like 2 days later, and then at night I was sitting outside Marsh from the Irish Bunk, who's a close personal friend, listening to him breathe, and he would stop breathing for like 30 seconds and had in his sleep. He was so congested and like, but we didn't know anything about COVID at all at that time. They were like, oh, go ahead, get on a plane and go to the place where this thing is happening. Yeah. Don't worry about that. You'll be fine. You know, nobody said anything to us. So we all got sick, but we just thought it was, you know, your typical tour sick. Like everybody gets sick on tour, every tour.
Yeah.
And then we get home feeling fine, spry and ready to go on another tour. Nice. And then first day of that next direct support to Thy Art, first day, last day. So
wait, so that was in America though?
In America.
So you wow, they had to fly home.
Oh, let me tell you how fucked it was. Think about this. They're from Australia, so they had to fly home. And then that Missouri band is from Iceland, and they had to fly home. And then all the bands on the package already. So it was crazy, like crazy.
That's so much money lost.
Okay, to put it into perspective, I can't talk about other people's profit and loss stuff, but what I can say for Fit is we had a merch person, excuse me, a sound guy, all the guys from the band, a van, a trailer that were rented, about $15,000-$17,000 American dollars worth of merch in the trailer. A board that we rented, a snake that we rented. Like, I can go through everything. But we were easily $35,000 in debt that day.
And that's with not international flights and visas.
And these guys had to have another fucking 20 grand on top of that, right? So, here's what I will say. Fit for an Autopsy. I hate the word fans, right? It's like my least favorite word. Because I don't, saying, oh, we have fans, it sounds like so cocksuckerish.
What do you call them then?
Friends of the band. Friends of the band that support us, right?
Nice.
Because I think it's gross to be like,
yeah, I feel gross saying the word.
It feels weird.
I feel like I don't say it.
Because, you know, coming from the world that I come from, like punk and hardcore, like fans just sounds, ugh.
Yeah.
You know? So the people who support us, all of the people that come out to our shows, we put our merch up. The next day, it was online, and I swear to God, in less than 48 hours, we sold every single piece of merch we had.
Yeah.
I couldn't fucking believe how much support we got. So, to everybody who bought a shirt or told their friends that we got fucked and their friend bought a shirt or whatever, like, you guys saved our band. Like, legit saved Fit for an Autopsy from crashing and burning. So, while...
I feel like the pandemic, like, was eye-opening for
Friends of the bands.
Friends
who
of the
us.
Bands that like they some of them realized like, oh, like this is like, I knew that streaming services weren't paying well enough or whatever, but this is like my favorite bands are gonna split up.
Yeah.
Which I mean, is true.
I believe that if fans of music were not as supportive as they are, we all would have lost our asses. It would have been over. I mean, think about, we canceled like 7 or 8 tours. And you know how much money a band makes on a tour, like a band that's doing fairly well.
The only thing you can fucking do.
Yeah. And
not
like,
making money from CDs.
Yeah. And, you know, vinyl and shows are really the only thing, and t-shirts. That's it. You don't make money off of making records. Like, let's talk about the misconception of being on a label.
I love your fucking soapbox immediately. I love it. Go.
I don't give a fuck. There's a big misconception about what happens with bands when they get signed.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, these bands are getting these big number things and blah, blah. It's like, well, it's a loan. It's not my money.
Yeah.
I don't see that money. We use that to record and make a record and press a record and get the art. And if you see 4 videos from a band, it's because they had a budget to do 4 videos.
Yeah.
Somebody just doesn't come in and go, I love your band. I'm going to record a video. It's like, that'll be $11,000 yeah. American.
And
you know?
Borrow the money from the label to make those videos.
Yep.
And then you pay that money back through what percentage is left over from a record sale. What percentage is yours, depending on your deal, that's the money that you pay back the other stuff from.
Right.
So no one makes any money.
Right. And no one makes any money. And the craziest part is like, another great thing about COVID is...
You don't hear that much.
No, there were some really big positives. Great thing about COVID is that people stopped, took a breath, dealt with their mental sides of things that they have to deal with. And I'm sure some people are still dealing with it. But then they locked into music. They locked into movies. They locked into entertainment. They locked into being able to read things and learn things like education and different stuff. I know a lot of people started businesses, found new ways to make money. You know, don't have to depend on big corporations anymore to make a living. I mean, we were just talking about that 5 minutes ago. Like, there are some pretty positive things that came out of such a terribly negative thing like COVID. And all of our records right up until this one that we just recorded recouped during COVID. So like, that's when you start to actually make a little profit. I mean, you have to think, we released our first record like, I don't fucking know, like 2011 or 12 or something like that, like eons ago, never recouped. And then all of a sudden, like that, all of our records, people are listening.
Yeah, and I think we recouped during the pandemic as well.
It's crazy.
I got a check from Sumeria and I was like,
what the fuck is this?
No one gets those.
Yeah. So like, take a minute to think about that. Like, all of these folks that were home, all of these humans that were trying to travel through their brain during all the chaos, there were some things that happened to some of us because those people locked into these things. And those things helped them. And by those things helping them, it helped us. And now we can start from literal scratch and come back and do this thing that we do again. Like, there's a couple of things that happened that, you know, I'm not an overly positive kind of person.
No.
But I'm also...
You have your moments.
Yeah, but I'm logical. And when I sat down and I thought about everything, I was like, holy shit, you know, as bad as this was, like, I can have a career when this is over. And now that we're getting back on our feet and playing shows and people are coming out, it feels like home again. But, like, if it wasn't for everybody watching who support, not even us, supported just whatever band they supported, we would all been fucked. We would have been, you know, folding t-shirts in some fucking store or at a restaurant.
I mean, the stores were fucking closed as well. Who knows what we would have fucking done. Two things you touched on there that I want to talk about. So number one, these shows back, and don't play it up if it's not true. Were they... So, like, well, you did one U.S. tour and then this one since everything came back.
Yeah, we're about four, I think today's day four.
Was it as romantic as you thought it was in, like, you know, during the pandemic? I'll give you my experience quickly and then you can bounce off that. During the pandemic, I was like, I cannot wait to play a show, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be amazing. The energy is going to be amazing. Then we did five shows in the U.S. I got COVID on those shows. They weren't that great. And I was like, oh, that was like the most anticlimactic thing ever. But then we did that Under Oath tour and I was like, okay, this is right. The romance.
I think it depends on the situation, right? And it depends on what your outlook is. I've been playing shows since the early 90s. I mean, I'm 46 years old. And that's the longest amount of time since I was a fucking baby. My brother's been taking me to shows since 1986, heavy.
I was not alive.
Right. I was 10 going on 11, 86 to 87. I went to my first show on my...
What was the first show?
My first show was a bunch of thrash metal bands, Cyanide, Silo, Abaraxis, like all these like local thrash metal bands. And then I went to that with my brother. And then like a couple of weeks later...
Where was local? Let's get a little
local,
pat
Edison,
pat
New Jersey. I grew up between Edison and New Brunswick. So, and yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with New Brunswick. So there was like a rec center, you know, like a sports rec center, and they used to do shows there. So I saw this local thrash metal show, and then a couple of days later, we went to see Exodus and DRI. So like my upbringing was like instantly hooked, you know what I mean? And like, then I was going to shows like every weekend. And then by the time I was like 13 or 14, I had made friends in the local hardcore scene, and I was jumping the train into New York and going to CBGB's at 14. Like, Brendan from SFA used to work the front door, and like We used to go in there all the time and like all this shit. It's just crazy how like everything developed from me going to shows. My whole life changed. So that was the longest stint that I had of not going to shows.
In like 37 years or yeah. whatever.
I mean, imagine that. So I was going crazy, you know, and I was trying to be positive and doing all these workouts and putting them on the internet. And it was only a matter of time before I crashed. And, you know, everybody was trying to be so positive. And then it just took me over. And so when we came back, the first few shows were sold out and fucking crazy. And it was our headliner.
You had the...
So I had the romance immediately, you know. It was instant vibration. Like, I got on stage... the first show was like kind of a clusterfuck in Ohio, but it was great. And then we played in Chicago the next day, I think. And what's the venue in Chicago with the sewer in the stage? It's like a big cement stage with a sewer in it. I can't remember. It's like a manhole cover, but I can't remember the name. I always forget. It's a really great venue. The staff is sick. But anyway, I'm sure people who know it will remember the name of the club. But,
bottom lounge. We only ever play the bottom lounge at that one that's almost downtown. That is.
It's the one with the train tracks that run over top of
it. Oh fuck! No, that's the one. Yeah. And there's like the you have to go upstairs. Or maybe you play the big room. I don't know.
No, we play the big room.
Must play the big room.
You play the big room too, probably. I think there's only one room. It's got that really good bar restaurant next door. There's like a park across the street. And no, when you're on stage, it's a big cement stage, and it's got like a Ninja Turtles like sewer top to it.
It's not the same venue.
I can't remember. I feel bad because the venue's incredible, but the show was crazy. And then the next day was crazy. And then we played in Iowa City at this weird barbecue/show venue kind of place. And 400 kids showed up on a Tuesday night.
Nice.
In Iowa City. And I was like, this is it. And 17 sold out shows or so. 16, 17 sold out shows. So it was romantic. It was beautiful.
That's fucking awesome.
It was like the
what
best.
What was the lineup?
It was Fit, Enterprise Earth, Ingested.
Wait, that's the same as this
It's
tour.
The same tour, but what was the... But Sentinels is on this tour. Great American Ghost is on this tour, and they were on the last one. But there's another band on the last one, and I'm drawing a blank again because I'm bad at this. But we have one band swap. So it was very close to this tour that we're doing right now. And nice. It's been good.
How good are Ingested?
Ingested are great.
Fucking so sick. Yeah, like laughably fast as well.
It's like all the best parts of a bunch of bands that I like filled with like British humor.
Yeah. In 2008, I used to work in a warehouse with Lynn.
Yeah, drummer. Lynn's like, sick Lynn's dude.
He's a fucking amazing
sick
drummer.
Human. Yeah, great drummer.
So fast.
Nice dude.
He used to. I don't know if he still does this.
Annotations
I think he's chilled out.
Top,
no, but he used to do stuff like... It's not my place to say, but I'm going to say it. He used to do stuff like boof two pills up his ass, stick a fucking bottle of wine up there, flip onto his back, butt chug the bottle of wine with two fucking ecstasy tablets up his ass, and then would just be fucked up. And then he would have the most crazy night, because I used to tour when he was in Annotations with him, and he would have the most crazy fucking night, and then he would just play like a maniac the next day.
It didn't matter.
Absolute shredder.
I mean, I can barely wake up in the morning, and I'm straight edge. I don't do anything. So, yeah, I mean, those guys are incredible. They're incredible, and they're, you know, we played in Manchester, and that's their hometown. And it was great. It was great to watch them receive that kind of like hometown warm welcome, aka break the guy next to you's arm.
Yeah. You know, warm fucking.
Yeah, warm ass beating.
A warm fucking slam welcome.
But it was good, man. They were really good. I enjoy those guys as people too. You know, that Sentinels band, they're opening the tour and they're kind of a young band, but they're really doing it and they're very nice kids. You know,
Dave, the drummer. He's a great drummer.
Dave's nice dude. Great fucking haircut. Good kid.
He's got the me haircut going on.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen
it. The band is good. And Great American Ghost is a band that I think everybody needs to know about.
Band's fucking
They're like
awesome.
A secret weapon, man.
Yeah.
Every record they put out, it's kind of like what we do where they're kind of like formulating changes for every record and like naturally becoming a better band, but like also... finding different ways to change their sound but still be who they are.
Yeah.
And I fucking love watching bands take that evolution. You know, you have bands like Hatebreed who can make the same record a million times and it's just awesome. But then Gojira is another record that, or another band rather, that people like compare us to. But I think one thing that we really have in common is like it's a constant change. It's a constant change all the time. And I think Great American Ghost is another one of those bands that have found a way to explore different sounds but not lose their identity. And that's a
all
really
excellent gym bands as well.
Yes.
Great American Ghost, Fit. The new Fit is on the gym rotation.
Yeah, buddy.
The fuck, what is the fucking song? The song with the fuck, I was talking to Will on the podcast about it. I'm terrible with song names. With the weird riff, it's weird.
Yeah, Higher Level of Hate.
Song fucking rips.
That's not my gym jam off the record. But there,
really?
But my gym jam off the record is In Shadows. Gum, 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 gum.
Some just insane, insane fucking gym bangers.
I mean, Will's a fucking genius, dude. I mean, bottom line, like everybody's like, Will writes all your music. And I'm like, there's always a guy
in
every band. Like, you're just fucking me off. Don't take a piss.
Especially in fucking like death metal, deathcore, like any like super metal.
What happens?
You need that. It's precise.
Yeah, what happens if you have too many cooks in the kitchen? Everything comes out like shit. So Will just doesn't tour with us. And they're like, oh, he tours with End. And I'm like, yeah, they do a couple of weeks here or there. But Fitz's a touring machine.
Yeah.
He needs to be home doing his job.
He does End for a vacation.
Yeah.
He wants to cosplay. Like right now, Will Putney, I saw some clip last night and they're like sleeping in fucking like hostels that we used to sleep in like fucking 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Will's like, it's like Will's going on camp.
Yeah, but I also think Will should be touring. I think that's the one thing that when you're writing music, you need to understand, you know? And not for any other reason, but it's not easy. It's not, being on tour is not easy. So now when he goes out and he tours, I'm like, sick, this is cool. Because then when I'm complaining about touring, he'll understand. Like,
yeah.
I know they're having some backline issues right now and they have some things going on, which is typical for tour, right? Like, that's just what happens. So then when I complain about that, he can be empathetic and, like, understand.
Right now, he is in a green room. He is in Hamburg logo green room. That's where Will Putney is right now.
Eating, like, raw tofu.
Yeah.
Because
there's four chairs.
Yeah.
Three bands, four chairs.
Four chairs. One of them is broken and the other one's duct taped back together. But, I mean, I think End is a sick band. And I think End is like the other side of what Will Putney does. So with Fit, I mean, we could talk about the lineage and how it worked. Like when we wrote our first record, it was like every other band. We were in a room together. And then when we wrote Hellbound, Will just had all of these ideas. And it was like, all right, I'm just going to be stubborn and complain about not writing. But
classic.
Like, yeah, I'm a prick.
Yeah, but everyone does it.
Yeah. So, but then he's like, I got all these tracks, you know, and it's like, fuck, dude.
Every single person that knows Will does a Will impression on this podcast.
I've got all these tracks, you know.
He doesn't.
You know, no more glasses now. He had the LASIK surgery.
He looks crazy.
He looks, it's so weird. I've known him forever with glasses. But, you know, it's like, how do you argue with perfect? How do you, you know, like, and I know people say, oh, you're saying Fitz. No, I'm saying that when he writes these songs, I listen to them, I'm like, this is fucking perfect.
He has a fucking Grammy. If anyone has a bone to pick, like, oh, you're saying Will's perfect.
Yeah.
He fucking is.
Yeah, he's fucking perfect. Like, and I'll send him one or two riffs, and then I'll hear something that's similar, and I'm like, okay, like, I did my job. Like, I inspired him to write a riff. Cool. That's great. Like, whatever. That's all I need. I come in, I write a couple solos. Boom. I'm done. It's over. I've contributed to things I need to. My job is to take Will's ideas and go out and pound them into the pavement. But that's every band. Every band has one, maybe two people. I mean, you look at bands like Meshuggah, the drummer writes 80% of everything. The singer barely writes lyrics. It's in every interview. They talk about it. Mm. Like, music isn't just about writing as a unit. There's also the idea of one person having the ability to write music
skills
that benefits the band. And whatever, I mean, I have other projects that I'm kind of like slowly working on in the background for me to get that thing that I need, but it's never as good as what Will
yeah,
shits out.
So did you find, how many years did it take you to just be okay with
two records?
Two records. That, I think that's the same with everyone. Everyone I know that has two guitarists, it's only bands with two guitarists, because most of the time it is...
It's a guitar player.
Yeah.
Well, we have
fucking three
guitarists. So
two live plus
two
Will.
Live players plus Will.
Yeah.
And the thing is Will writes music very differently than we do, right? Will plays differently than we do. So when we get the music, sometimes I have to find a way to play this riff that he's playing, locate the notes in a different area on the guitar neck, and then work it there so it works for me. So like there's this whole...
Standing up. So yeah, you can do it standing up.
There's this whole rewriting process that we have to do where we're kind of like figuring out what works for us in what way. And it's fine. It's this whole... we've got it now. And the thing is like we've been talking a lot, and now that we've been, you know, somewhat groomed to play music the way that Will writes it, now we can maybe successfully write some stuff to give to him.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about getting our own rehearsal room, not having to share with anybody, just a space that we can have so we can get in a couple times a month and actually be a band again.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of things we want to do, but it won't stop Will from writing fucking 300 great songs while we're on tour. It's just, it is what it is. You can't argue with a great, what do? You listen to it. And you're in your heart, you know it's perfect. And what am I going to do? Oh, fuck it, I want to write it. No.
Like, it's funny you say that with the, like, the more you've played what he's written, the more you can bring stuff to the table that you know he's going to like that fits it. Even because Will is a massive part of Stray. Huge part of Stray. Sure. He's credited as a writer on Stray records. Like, there'll be times when me and Tom are writing something and I'm practicing it and I fucking hear like the ghost of Will Putney in my head and he's like,
that's not gonna work.
No. And he'll go like, oh, the main one is, I'm gonna need a China on that snare. And I'm like, it's almost impossible. And he's like, you can do it. And then we do it and 10 takes later I get it. But then, so when I write parts now, it's always like I have...
Yeah, the little tiny Will Putney on your shoulder.
Tiny little Will Putney.
Whispering in your ear, play it better.
Yeah.
Do it one more time.
Do this instead.
Do it again. You got it. Next one, you got it. Next one, you got
he
it.
He does this thing with me where I'm like, I can't do this. He probably does this with you. I'm like, I can't do this because I'll have to replicate this live. Mm-hmm. And then he'll go, let's just try it. And if you get it, you get it. And then, of course, I get it once. And he goes, oh, you got it. And then it's like, I have to go and practice that for 30 hours, that one little fucking fill.
My favorite line from Will Putney is, it's not my job to play it well, right? Play it well live. That's your job. It's my job to write the track. And that's a non-negotiable thing because Will puts so much time into the music. We have to, and I'm a mediocre guitar player at best. I have to work my fucking ass off to keep up with Tim. No, it's just the facts, dude. A guy like Tim makes me better. A guy like Blue makes me better. And in the past 3 years as a guitar player, I've improved leaps and bounds because the music has just gotten intense. And everybody says, oh, these sound easier. And like you listen to a song like Two Towers, and that's this clean, open... You know that
big
huge open.
No, the first single?
No, the first single's Far From Heaven. That's another one. That bouncy riff in the beginning, that's a son of a bitch to play because you have to be consistent. It's more the timing than the playing.
Yeah.
So you're like, you know, now we have in-ears and I got the click in my ear and it makes it all easier, but for years we didn't have that. So it was like you either get good enough to play it or you sound like shit every night. So that's just it, you know, like we had to get good enough. So, you know, say what you will about Will Putney and about, like, what he does for Fit for an Autopsy, but I'll tell you right now, man, like, I love having him in the position that he's in. I love having Blue and Tim tell me, you played like shit tonight. Like, you have to work on this. And we do it to each other. We all do. Hypercritical. Because now when you see my band, 10 years ago, we would have never sounded like this. Mm. You know, each member in this band has, like, Hossian's a fucking monster. Like, each member has brought a different thing to the table that has changed the way we sound as a band. And being an original member, me and Will are the last original members of the band, and watching the evolution as the members come in, I realized something is that bands have to have member changes. It's a very rare thing that you don't in the beginning stages of the band. And the beginning stages is like the first three or four records. Mm. And once you get that right team, it just happens.
Yeah, you've got just trial and error.
Yep. You're not an original member of Stray, yeah? But you brought something to the team that wasn't there before. And everybody says it, like, that you completed that band. You know what I mean?
Thanks, mate.
That's just true, you know, and you can hear it. So it's just the evolution that has to happen. It's not easy. There was a point where Will was going to quit because we lost a member that was a good friend and he wanted to walk away. And I was like, absolutely not. Yeah. You cannot give up on this.
Yeah, you absolutely
can't. I was like, if you're not going to do it, I'm still going to do it. So you should just stay. And then
I'm
going to
destroy your empire. Yeah, I'm deliberately going to write bad songs.
I'm going to shit all over your empire. It's going to sound like fucking Hatebreed or Madball by the time we're done. So
I'm still going to.
Not that they're not great
credit.
Bands. It's just going to not
so
be what it is.
Yeah.
Hatebreed and Madball are both great bands. Just a different thing, you know. I don't want it to sound like I'm talking badly about those bands.
I know
I'm not.
You love those bands.
Yeah, I do too. Set It Off is probably like my favorite early New York hardcore record ever. And there's a couple others, but that record fucking rules.
Is that what you came up on? Hardcore?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I grew up going to thrash metal shows. And then 86, 87, I discovered like Cro-Mags and Bad Brains. And I was already listening to like Black Flag and all that stuff. And that just kind of developed. And then in high school, I discovered like the early 90s. I was listening to some Agnostic Front stuff, and then like bands like American Standard and The Mob and all that stuff. And then I discovered heavier hardcore bands like Judge and Bold, and I love the Gorilla Biscuits and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, I discovered Obituary, and that led me down a different path. So I'm like a hardcore kid, but listening to the heavy shit. So then when bands like Madball and Hatebreed and all those bands started hitting All Out War, like, yeah. I mean, there's, dude, Hunter Demons is like, probably the best metalcore band that's ever existed. And then that started...
Real metalcore.
Fuck.
Real metalcore.
Real. I mean...
Not what it is now. Come on.
I mean, and both singers, both Bruce and Pete, just fucking murdering it. And that dude, Rick Brile, that plays guitar in Hunter Demons, is a fucking... Everyone should know about that dude. He is such an amazing guitar player. And luckily, he's become a personal friend. And like, I get to learn from him. It's almost offensive how good musically that band is. Their drummer's incredible, everything. Reach kills it, like, so I love that band. And then I discovered Morbid Angel, and then the Deicide Amon demo dropped, and I was like, whoa, what the fuck is this? Then it was this whole thing that just happened. So I've always fought between death metal and hardcore, but I also love, like, Steely Dan, and I like fucking listening to, like, John Mayer, and, like, I listen to everything, you know, 70s, 60s.
Yeah,
it doesn't
matter. Classic. Just a classic musician.
I'm a music guy.
You're a music guy.
Yeah, I love it.
So, at what point, because I wanted to get onto the COVID thing as well, because I was going to ask you, but then we might as well just figure it out. Like, you have a business. You own a tattoo shop.
I do.
You are a tattoo artist.
I am.
How did COVID affect that?
Fuck.
Okay. Where was it? Where are you based now? Because you will get some people that want to come get tattooed by you.
Sure. Okay. So, December 2019, I signed a check for a year's lease.
Great timing.
Went on tour. Came home, we started setting up for the build out. The plan was when I came home, we're going to start the build out and get everything on the level. And then I was going to go on tour and do the U.S. Dieter's Murder Tour and then come home. And then the shop would be ready to open, and we would open March, April.
Yeah.
Well, as you all know, the world said, fuck you. So I wrote a check and lost, you know, a pretty good chunk of money every month, my partner and I, because we couldn't build. We couldn't get permits. Everything was shut down. We went from opening in March, April to opening in July, August. So 6 to 7 months of just pissing money away.
You know what's crazy with that, though? The tattoo studios here were closed for almost 2 years.
Yeah. Well, the thing is we live in a state where they were a little easier, you know? Not that I agree with it, like, wholly, but I was in a position where it was like, can we work this out in a way where we can kind of soft open tattoo our clients and be really safe about it. Have one or two people in the shop at a time, COVID test, do the whole thing. And we did that. And it was just me and my business partner, and we had one person working for us, and then that person quickly left. And then we were able to open. And then we had somebody, this guy Andrew, who turned out to be an amazing employee. He lost a job, and he was like, fuck, I don't have anywhere to work. And we were like, well, come work with us. And then all of a sudden, boom, then we hired Josh, and Josh brought his apprentice, who is also great. And we got this new guy, Spencer, and this dude Oscar came to work with us for a while before he opened his own shop. And then all of a sudden, it's running like clockwork. Like, everything's moving. You know, all the fucking gears are greased and moving. So luckily we got...
So it sucked, but it could have been worse.
Well, we lost our asses, and we were at a loss for the first 2 years of the business. Yeah. Like, we were just so far in debt and unable to catch up. But we were able to keep the business moving, and now we're doing very well. Like, we're very lucky. We have a very supportive neighborhood that we're in, because we're kind of like a neighborhood tattoo shop. We're not like in the city. We're on the outskirts of a neighborhood. And man, I
where
can't...
Where is it that you are?
In Smyrna, just outside Atlanta. The name of the shop is Rose Gold Tattoo. Our Instagram is Rose Gold Tattoo, ATL. You can find us on IG, Rose Gold Tattoo ATL, just whatever. And yeah,
so you also relocated to
I moved
Atlanta.
Yeah, but I moved 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What? Oh, because I always see you in Jersey.
Well, yeah, because that's where the band is.
Right.
I moved 10.
In my head, it was in fucking Jersey.
My son just turned 12, and he was 2 going on 3 when we moved from New Jersey down there. It was Atlanta and Smyrna and the surrounding areas are a place, if you're a musician, you can sneak into an area and not pay as much to live. And you can have like a lifestyle like the Northeast, because I live just like I lived in the Northeast, 25 minutes outside New York City. I live 25, 30 minutes outside Atlanta. I can make city wages and live in a more like rural kind of area and pay less. My son goes to a great school, like, and my mortgage on my house is so cheap. I
Why
could
do you
never
think I live in Glasgow, Scotland?
Right.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. You can be a touring guy or girl or whatever and afford to live and pay your bills and support your family. I mean, the most important thing is, if I'm going to keep doing this, it can't affect my son's life. Mm. So if I lived in New Jersey, I would never be able to tour as much as I do and live on a touring guy's wage. But living in Atlanta, you know, at the time we bought our house, houses were under the $200,000 mark, under the $180,000 mark. We bought a really nice house in a good neighborhood for, you know, a very reasonable price. And I'm able to support my family in a way that I never could on a touring guy's wage. And now that I have the tattoo shop, it's even better.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm very lucky, and I'm going to say thank you to my team, because my team of guys at my tattoo shop are amazing with customers, and they make great tattoos, but they're also very understanding to my lifestyle, and they give me the ability to own a business and to go out. So my business partner and my guys, if you ever see this, thank you, because you make
such a nice guy. Where does the bad rap come from?
I used to be in a big fucking jerk off, dude. You know, so
you're a bit, yeah, you're a bit like a legend. Give me the worst of you. Give me the worst.
I don't want to get
no, because everyone changes.
Yeah, I was just angry, man. I had a really rough upbringing. Your typical sob story, childhood bullshit. I'm not going to sit here and cry for myself, but it was hard. You know, extremely rough coming up, you know, emotional abuse and some physical abuse and sexual abuse and abandoned by my father and my mother, doing the best she could, but maybe not being the most stable person ever. You know, I'm not talking bad, but she went through a lot while we were going through a lot. And, you know, my stepfather coming in and trying to make that work and that being hard and, you know, being on the poorer end of life and not having a lot of stability and, you know, and then being a fucking fat kid and getting picked on top of that and dealing with that. It just made me angry. I was pissed off at everything. And I did everything I could to take my anger out on everybody I could, because I thought if I was hurting, everybody should hurt. And I didn't realize that then.
Yeah.
But I realize it now. And looking back, I was fucking, I don't like who I was, but I like who I'm becoming. Mm. You know, we live in a time now where it's really important to realize that we're all broken and to empathize with other people's brokenness, like, and try to repair each other, yeah, and also tolerate other people's process. Like, I think the biggest thing right now is, look, like, feelings are important. For the first time probably in the history of America, we're putting people's emotional side over their monetary, or, you know, don't be a pussy. We don't say that anymore. It's like, okay, well, what's making you break? What's making
some people still say it.
Yeah, some people say it. And I say it jokingly to my friends.
But the
overwhelming population.
Especially people in our world.
Never used
to be like open to talking about stuff like that.
Right. Now, if you, I can talk about my abuse. I can talk about all these things in a way where it's healthy.
Yeah.
Where I used to just get mad. You know, like.
How long did that take?
35 years.
Was there a turning point?
My wife.
Aww.
And my son.
That's awesome. Everyone I know with kids is so much less angry than me. I have an experience yesterday. I'm not even going to name any names. Just a friend of mine who has kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just shooting the shit about something. And one of our other friends had done something on Instagram. And I was like, look at this motherfucker. You know, just like what you do. And he just turned around and he went, yeah, but do you think he's happy? And like, do you care? And I was like, oh, I feel terrible. And it was like an immediate, and I was like, that's dad brain. I think you can only get that once you've, I don't know. And it made me like check myself. And I was like, I love that guy. Why am I talking shit about him?
Right. Well, I mean, it's easy to, okay. So most times, and I found this out about myself, when you have some kind of an issue with something that somebody does, it's because it's something that you know you've done.
Oh, it was exactly that as well.
And you feel like an asshole, and you know that this is wrong.
It was exactly that.
So, like, look, man, I'm not perfect. I struggle every day. I used to say and do things that I never should have said and done. And you would make excuses for it, and now I just say I was wrong. You know, and there are a lot of people out there that have done wrong things. There are a lot of people out there that have taken advantage and said things and done things because for shock value or whatever. And I was mad at everyone, dude. It wasn't just one person or, you know, it was everyone. Anybody who was doing better than me, I was mad at them. Anybody that wasn't struggling, I was mad at them. Anybody that opposed me or tried to make me feel a certain way, I just saw all the terrible things in my life and I fucking attacked it. And it was a coping mechanism, so I didn't have to sit down and think about how vulnerable I was because these fucking bad things happened to me. And a lot of people are like that. And I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for the bad shit I've done. And when people say, you know, you fucking were an asshole to me, the only thing I can say is, well, I could say I was sorry, but that doesn't change anything. So if it's any benefit or if it means anything, you're right. I was bad to you and I apologize. And I've had people come to me and tell me they were bad to me. And like, you know, I've always tried to reconcile with things in a way where it's like, you know, when you get mad at somebody for doing something shitty to you, it's like, well, how many times have I done something stupid or shitty to people? So it's like, yeah, you know, you're right. And as people, we have to have tolerance for other people's healing processes. You can't tell someone, well, you're 35 years old. You should be over that part of your life right now. It's like, well, maybe I just haven't had a chance to find the thing that makes me look at myself in the mirror. And when I met my wife, so
it's wife or mushrooms?
Yeah. I mean, DMT, you know what I mean?
I did the other one.
But when I met my wife, I was in a really weird position. I had just gotten out of a really bad relationship with somebody who I cared about deeply, but I probably should have never been in a relationship with because both of us were broken as shit.
Mm.
But, you know, she's doing great. You know, and I'm doing great and we still talk, and that's really cool and healthy, I think, to have a relationship with somebody that you should have never been with in the first place. So I met my wife at a point in my life where I wasn't looking to be with anybody. I was just pissed and didn't want anything. And she just pressured her way in there, and I don't say that lightly. Like, she sought me out and put the time in and showed up at my old job after we had gone out on a date and didn't necessarily go the way we both wanted it to because I was distracted and she was trying to look like, you know, she wasn't looking for a relationship, and there was all these weird underlying things. It was nice. We had a nice time, but I just took her home, kiss on the cheek, and left, kind of thing. And she just kept coming around, and it made me feel like, wow, like, why is this girl pursuing me? And then, you know, she had a setup at home, man. She had a nice car and a college education paid for, and her parents gave her everything she needed. And she literally gave all that up to move out of her parents' house and move in with me. They took the car away. They did all this stuff. And she's like, I don't care. She's like, I want to be with you. And like that made me sit back and be like, wow, like, holy shit, that's a fucking big deal. So then I started looking at myself differently. And then a couple of years later, she got pregnant with my son. And then it's like, all right, I really have to figure out what's going on in my life. Mm. I used to talk to people like shit. I used to just be pissed off all the time. And I don't want to be like that around my son. And then I just, she helped me. I'm not fixed. I'm just better along the line than I was before. She helped me do all that. I owe her. I always tell her, like, when you're ready to leave, I fucking get it. You know what I mean? You've been putting up with a lot for the past couple of years. But, like, we have the kind of relationship where we'll start really heated, but then we realize what's going on and we can sit down and talk. And, like, that has transcended into other areas of my life. I still fight with people. Will, more than anyone, he's like, we go at each other. You know how he can get. Yeah. And we, boom, we clash and then call each other back and then we can be level. But I wasn't always like that. I would just fly off.
I'm so stubborn. That's my worst thing. I'm so stubborn. I can easily, like, if I have an argument with someone, I can put the phone down and never speak to them ever again.
Well, I didn't speak to my mother for like 2.5 years because of something she said that she shouldn't have said. You know, I'm very much capable of doing that.
I hope we don't fall out or else we'll never speak again.
For me and you?
Yeah.
Nah. We'll never.
I don't think so.
Too adorable.
And we don't work together.
No, we don't.
There's no need to work.
Yeah. It's fine. It's easy when you don't have to do anything serious with somebody. If we could just be friends.
I have friends where I've went to work with them, or we've done like one project together, and we're like best friends. And like by the end of it, we've both been like, we can't do that again.
Yeah.
Because it's,
well, I've been friends with my business partner for like fucking 20 years, and I've actually have two business partners that are actually people that have really helped me fix my brain, and one of them, I was having a really hard time through COVID and we were opening the shop together, and he got pissed at me, and rightfully so. And he came at me in a way where, like, I was like, you know, not doing enough, and kind of he was doing more because I felt like I was failing at everything. My fucking tattooing career was falling apart because of COVID, and my fucking music career was falling apart, and I had some money saved and it was just fucking flying out the door, and I was panicking. How am I gonna feed my kid? And I was just depressed, like borderline, like fucking bullet in my brain depressed. And he came at me and he was pissed, and he had every right to be pissed. But the second that I said, I'm not doing good, the conversation immediately changed and he became my friend again. And I realized that I had good people. He helped me a lot too. That helped me a lot. And, you know, you don't think you have that in your life until it shows its face. And I owe him and my wife and one of my other friends who I'm in another band with, like, I just owe all these people for helping me realize that I can be a decent human being. Because when you're in that state, you don't think you can. Yeah. You think you deserve all the shit. And you don't realize that your attitude is just creating the shit. No one's giving you the shit. The world is not forcing the shit to you. You're creating your own pile of shit to jump in every day. And as you start to realize that and get better, it becomes a smaller pile. And then you're just stepping in it instead of like diving in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And when you're working with someone, when you're working with friends, I can relate to that as well during the pandemic. When I was at my lowest during the pandemic, similar thing. Like everyone fucking knows my shit. I went through a fucking divorce during the pandemic, loads of shit. But similar shit, and I'm working with people who are friends, and I'm trying to work through it and figure out what we're doing or whatever. And there's one guy that I don't even want to say his name or whatever, but like, I remember just texting him out of the blue, like, just fuck you, man. And it was like, and then we had this huge argument, and then I did exactly the same as you. I was like, look, I am fucking low. I'm really sorry. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm fucking like, and then again, it just changed and we had a chat. Same Rob that does my merch, Robert Allotment does my merch. We have, you know, he's got a fucking balance in a million bands, and I'm throwing ideas at him and all this shit, and something gets lost in translation or whatever, and we have a fucking huge blow up about it. And then at the end of the day, it's like when Leica went into hospital, like we were arguing about something business wise, but then he just phones me and he's like, "Is she okay?" And we had a big chat, and he was like, immediately, you know, you forget the business thing, and then the friend chat makes you realize, like, I'm kind of being a cunt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the biggest problem is you never know how many of your friends are ready to chew on the end of a gun. Always remember that, you know? Like, that's a thing that you never know. Like, when you're mad at someone, then you're going to say something.
Chew on the end of a gun. Yeah. I've never heard it called that before.
You never know who's ready to end it. You know what I mean? And like,
fucking loads of us.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I'm talking about. Like, it's not fair for anyone to put a time limit on somebody's mental health. It's not fair for anyone to tell me you should be over the fact that you were sexually abused when you were fucking 9 years old. Who the fuck do you think you are to talk to me like that? That's a hard lesson learned for me, because I thought I was high and mighty. Oh, I'm fucking, look at me, I'm tough as fuck, blah, 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 blah. It took my son being in my arms for me to break down and realize, if I don't get my life together, I'm going to ruin this human. I learned every...
That's fucking impressive. Because some people don't. It's inherited trauma.
I know, my father. You can meet my father didn't. And if he's watching, fuck you. Because it'll be that way forever.
Would he be watching?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
Sick. Fuck you from me as well.
Fuck you. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had disgusting human beings out there that are terrible. You know, when I see somebody who I know did bad things growing up, being great parent, I'm like, you are bettering the world by realizing what was wrong with you. And and this is another thing, like, we're at a point in time in our, I guess, social standing in the entire world where we're being more open to different lifestyles and accepting people for who they are and not judging people for the things that they choose and allowing people to explore all these new spaces, right? The only way that gets better, the only way we end sexism, racism, fucking classism, all these different things, the only way we end that is by teaching our children how wrong it is. Because when we all die, they're the ones that are going to learn from our lessons. So if you're saying and doing things in your house, in front of your children, that are not better for them in the world, then you're just still a piece of shit. You have to sign yourself up to the fact that the way we were raised was not good. There are a lot of things that happened in my household that when I was a kid that will never happen in my household as an adult, because I don't want my son to feel how I felt, and I don't want my son to learn the things that I learned, so he has to unlearn them to be a better person. There's a big unlearning process that has to happen for people like us who have been through those things that breaks us. Like, you don't get broken overnight, you know? It's like the whole thing, you don't learn hate. You learn hate, you're not born with hate. You know, you take a bunch of kids and you put them in a fucking playpen, they just play together. They don't know any fucking different. You have to be taught to hate people. You have to be, it's a learned behavior.
Jealous that starts a fight and all that stuff.
Yeah, like, that's learned behavior. So you have to teach your kids. Now, I'm not saying I'm the best parent in the world, but I'm definitely not going to be like my parents.
Yeah.
And I tell my son, I bought him a phone a few years ago so I could text him on tour to tell him I love him every day. Like, I tell him that more in one day probably than I heard it my whole fucking life, because I just want him to know. You know what I mean? So we live in a time where it's our responsibility. And when I say our responsibility, I mean parents and teachers, people who can teach generations under us that we were fucking stupid. And that's it, man. That's why I...
Respect to you. Shout out to all the parents who've gone through trauma and they are stopping it so the trauma ends with them.
Yeah.
Because they're changing the world.
Break the cycle. Yeah.
What a fucking nice guy. I met you in the nice arc. So I'm like,
I was coming into the nice arc.
I was like, guy fucking rules.
Yeah, it's funny because people are like, oh, Pat, he's a fucking asshole.
Honestly, I think the first time I met you, I remember someone being like, oh, Pat's coming. And then you turned up, I was like, this guy fucking rules.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also situational. Could have been different. I could have had something terrible happen to me on the way there. And walked in and flipped the whole studio over and then walked out. I was a fucking...
I got lucky.
I'm a nerve, dude. I'm a open nerve. And you touch me the wrong way and I'm fucking in pain and then I'm angry. But now I'm better at that.
I like it. I'm going to take some of that on board. I think I'm in my redemption. I have late life trauma. I had a great childhood. But sure. Like, I think I'm in my fix myself, redemption arc, be more forgiving area of my life.
Well, a lesson that I taught my son was that when you do something to somebody, they don't have to forgive you, right? You can say you're sorry. You can say, hey, you know, I know this was wrong and it's my bad and I'm just putting it out there. And they could respond and be like, you know what? That's great that you see that, but fuck you. And at that point, you have to accept that. You know, so when you go through this repair phase, a big thing that holds people up is that you try to fix these relationships. And sometimes people are, you know, unresponsive or they don't care. And I think you can't be mad at somebody for being mad at you for something that you did to them. And that's a big thing. Mm. You know, I've done and said, and, you know, I look back on my life and I don't know that I regret it because it was a situation that I was in and I didn't have any other way out. And I'm not asking for sympathy, and I wouldn't have my wife and my son if I didn't go through all those things. I wouldn't be in my band.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be around like-minded people. But it would have been cooler if I did this in my early 20s. You know, I probably would have had a different kind of life, but here I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you can't live like that. Like, people, like, I got asked the other day, like, have you got any regrets? And I was like, I genuinely don't think I have any regrets. And everyone was like getting married? And I was like, no, because I wouldn't have... If I didn't have to pay for that shit, pay for the divorce, go through all that shit, then I wouldn't have, like, hustled during the pandemic to get the money to pay for that shit when I didn't have any jobs. And then now, like, the podcast is smashing, the fucking merch is smashing. I'm like, mm-hmm. So I don't regret any of it. I literally regret, maybe I regret some stuff, but they're not in my mind.
There's a difference between regret and, like, lessons learned that you can take with you. You know, if there's anything that I regret, I don't care. It's like maybe not spending enough time with my grandmother before she passed. My sister passed away a few years ago and that was really hard. And I wish I had a little bit more conversations with her, but I emotionally couldn't. I lost my nephew and my sister within like 7 days of each other.
Fuck.
There was an accident with my nephew and he passed away at 6 years old.
Jesus Christ.
And then my sister died from cancer. It was almost like she waited until everything was finished with Gage to decide that it was time.
It was her son.
No. It was my brother's son.
Right.
And but I felt, we always talk about it, like she held on. It just seemed like she held on just a little bit too long. But it was almost like she knew that she had to give the family a little bit of time because of what was going on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she even was like aware enough to know because she was pretty far out. But, you know, that was like a crazy year. So I regret maybe not getting to talk to her as much. I was on tour a lot and I was on the phone with her a lot. And I came home and I was like, look, we'll cancel this thing. And she was like, no, I want you to go, you know, being the supportive sister. So that was hard. So I regret that. Stuff like that. I don't know. I don't regret anything that happened to me. You can't change things that people do to you, you know? So you go through things and they are what they are, you know? But, you know, life's a journey, man.
You're such a fucking old wizard. I don't want to call
I'm
you
fucking
old.
Fucking old as shit. Right,
but there's wizard vibes. And you can only have a wizard vibe if you've been through that shit. So fucking respect to you. Let's lighten it up, though.
Sure, let's go for it.
So what we're going to do is the thing that I started doing. I don't know if you listened to Will's latest episode.
I didn't.
So the drum. This motherfucker.
Sorry.
I've been busy. So I've been doing a dream festival at the end, right? Don't you dare say a word yet, right? Because it needs to be off the cuff. And what we're going to do, I'm going to give you some people's examples. So it's a complete dream festival, as in like you were asleep and you had a dream and this happened. So it can be as crazy as you want. So I'll run you through what happens, but to give you, like we'll do it bit by bit, but to give you Will's final one was, it was in Australia outdoor festival, two main stages, Metallica headline, Nine Inch Nails co-headline. They flip-flop song to song, so Trent has to stand there watching Metallica play. Metallica is playing And Justice for All with the bass turned up, but with the St. Anger snare.
I fucking love this.
The crowd is all dogs. Will's got pretty fucking crazy. The crowd is all dogs. Everyone's drinking Spindrift. That's the sponsor. Then after the show, everyone gets on a flight to Japan to go to Ichiran and have ramen. And that was, I think it was Ichiran. Oh, the flight to Japan to have authentic ramen. And I'm flying the plane. That was Will's. Yesterday I did Malevolence, okay? Malevolence's was in Bali. Malev headlining. It's in a beach resort. Beach, stage, swimming pool. Three areas of mosh after the swimming pool so people can swim, get on the stage, and literally stage dive.
Stage
literally stage dive. Three areas of mosh. Just a crowd kill area, circle pit area, standard mosh area, then strip club style seating.
I love it.
Around there with bottle service and a Michelin star chef, then amphitheater sort of style at the back, and then after all of this, it's Malev supported by Drake, supported by a full hologram set of the 1991 Pantera Moscow show.
Jesus Christ,
fucking sick.
Pretty good.
And all of this is over by 5 p.m. where everyone gets on a massive super yacht. And there's Sheffield garage music played till the wee hours. That was theirs. But we're going to start with yours. Pack from Knock Loose's was in Prague. So, you know, it doesn't matter.
So it's just a pick a place.
So number one, we're picking, where is the venue? Is it a venue? Is it outdoors? What country is it?
Okay. I'm going to say Cancun, Mexico.
Oh, so nice. Mm-hmm. I got you thinking with this beach resort.
outdoor stage.
Nice.
I would say the stage backs up to the water. So the water is behind the stage. So when you're looking at the bands and you look past, all you see is beautiful Cancun water.
Ooh.
And the back of the stage is open. So there can be yachts and boats and things outside so we can walk to the other side and play for people partying on boats behind
us. Oh, this is a 360
360 show. Stage.
Nice, I like it.
So there we go with
Dream
that.
Dream Festival stuff, I love it. Mm-hmm. So Fit has to play, okay?
Fit's gonna direct support.
Okay, so who's the headliner?
Steely Dan is gonna headline.
Wow.
Walter Becker's Ghost is going to play guitar.
That's fine. It's a
has
dream.
To, we
it's
have
a,
to
it's have, a dream.
Right before the set, we're going to have a seance, and we're going to pull his ghost onto the stage and force him to play guitar for his band.
Okay? I love this. And then Fit is direct support.
Fit's direct support.
What I need from you is also what we have is a smaller stage. And we mm-hmm. need a headliner for the smaller stage show. At this point, you would give me a small band that maybe people haven't heard of that you're really into.
Great American Ghost is going to headline
on that this stage. Yeah, nice.
But that's going to be the Hawaiian stage.
Cool.
So everybody is going to have to play in grass skirts.
Nice.
And it's going to be like a party stage kind of thing. It's going to have something that shoots beach balls into the crowd.
Nice.
But the beach balls hit the air and explode, and there's smaller beach balls in there. So it's hundreds of beach balls in the crowd.
Balls.
Yeah, it'll be unbelievable.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Great American Ghost is on there. What's everyone drinking?
I would say we have a Polar Seltzer sponsor.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Any particular flavors standing out to you?
I'm going to say the Yeti flavor is one of my favorites. It's one of the, they do like these special flavors in the winter and the summer, but they did a flavor called Yeti, and that one was incredible. And then we'll just do your standard cranberry lime, because that's one of my go-to favorites. Oh, orange vanilla, because that's the goat.
That is the goat. Were you in the studio that when we were recording Internal Atomics and we tried to drink fucking, I can't remember what it was. We tried to drink 100 or
100
something.
100 of them, yeah, it was pretty crazy.
It was fucking hot. And there was the wall of it on top of the amps.
I do remember.
I bowed out. I think I did 12. And I started getting like a fucking headache.
Throwing up, like, yeah.
This is not right. Okay. What else do I need? Oh, and what's the after party? What happens afterwards? What time is the show on till?
Here's the deal. When Fit hits the stage, we go up on stage right about 15 minutes before sunset.
Give yourself the best 360 slot. 360 slot.
So the sun goes down, and then the stage is lit by pyro and black light. That's all the stage is lit with, okay? So then we finish, and when we finish, the stage drops, and another stage comes up with Steely Dan on it. It just rotates
already,
in and out.
They're already set up.
So then when we get done, we load up, and then when the show is over, under the stage, there is a passageway to a boat, and that boat will take us around the Yucatan to another section that is all set up with instruments, hundreds of instruments, all kinds of instruments. And everyone from the show gets to go up on this stage and we record a live record of cover songs of different bands that played on the festival
right.
with all of the fans of the music playing whatever instruments
they want.
Well,
how are you vetting these motherfuckers? Like, you can't just have Joe Schmo coming up and playing fucking drums.
But the thing is we have the best sound guy.
Who's so engineering this?
We're going to have, I would say, we have... man, this is tough.
No, you're gonna fucking tell me that.
Like, Woody, Twan, and Cam that we have out with us right now, and Luke Buckby, and that's our four engineers. So they get to pick which instruments are falling in properly, and those are the ones that they'll mix in. So okay. we can make this live record that everybody that's at the show can be a part of, that we can actually put out and have everybody
Sell
be
it.
A part of the festival.
Sell it.
Right.
Sell it back to the
fans.
Fans. okay, and then what's catering? Because that's what I forgot to ask Malev.
So there is a restaurant in...
Love it how everyone gets so into this that it's like... It's like when you're planning your Christmas presents when you're a kid and it's like, I'm not getting any of these. So,
yeah, yeah.
All right, well.
There's a place called Manny's. It's a steakhouse. And Marshy from Thy Art and I go there whenever we're, I believe it's in Minnesota, I want to say. Where is it after the burial? Is it there? Yeah, I think it is there. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's where it is. So we have them cater for all of the carnivores. And then we get a 4-star vegan restaurant owner to fly their chef out and cater the vegan and vegetarian side of things.
Nice.
But everything... has to be French-influenced American food.
What does that mean?
Steak, vegan versions of like chicken and steak and like.
Oh, is that like does that count as French influence?
Yeah, but with French influence, like American food with a French influence.
Wait,
so,
is this something you're creating now? Or
no,
does
this
exist?
Is an actual thing.
Oh,
it's
okay.
A real thing. Yeah, the French influence everything with cooking. French cuisine is like tons and tons of different. You know,
I didn't know they had an influence on American
yeah.
culture.
Oh, they do. Yeah, for sure. I mean, French influences everything when it comes to food and fashion. I mean, that's the Mecca. And it's served by models from the Ford modeling agency. And everyone has...
Now we're fucking talking.
And everyone has to wear leather pajamas when they're serving the food.
So we've got some kinks in there.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be fancy, sexy leather pajamas. It could be like a bunny white leather outfit, full length pants with bunny soda. I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
It just has to be leather pajamas.
Has to be
and
leather
that is
pajamas.
my homage to now I'm forgetting it. Cardi B, because there's a line in one of Cardi B's song that says, "All my pajamas are leather." She's talking about her being a freak.
Wait, so, is she coming to the festival?
She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah,
she wants. She has to be there.
Hard agree.
You know, she's playing.
Hard agree.
The festival.
Yeah, that's what I'm
she's
saying.
Definitely
she,
playing.
She playing. Okay, so where is she on the lineup?
She is direct support to Fit.
Okay, so let's do the rundown.
Okay.
Pat's Dream Festival. We are in Cancun, Mexico. We have Steely Dan is headlining.
Yeah.
They are main support. Fit for an Autopsy. We are on a 360-degree stage on the waterfront. There are boats and people partying on boats. They can watch from that side. The sun's going down when Fit plays. There's a normal people in the other bit not on boats. Second stage, Great American Ghost.
Headline.
Hawaii stage.
Yeah.
There is beach ball, cluster beach balls that will fire into the audience and they will explode and create more beach balls.
Yes.
It was like a game of worms.
Yes.
Like a kind of that worms vibe, but with beach balls.
Yeah.
Then once Fit is played at sunrise, the stage at
sunset,
the stage flips from underneath. Steely Dan start playing immediately. After that, a tunnel takes everyone to a boat where there is a full.
No, the boat goes around the Yucatan, party around the Yucatan, see all of it until you go to another stage.
Another stage with loads of equipment that we make a record. With everyone that was at the show, there's four engineers that are vetting.
So and Will has to mix and master.
It's a nightmare festival.
Yeah.
Will is mixing and mastering and just going, And Cardi B. There's a restaurant. There is Manny's is catering for the carnivores. And we have a four-star
vegan
chef coming. And every server is from the Ford Modeling Agency and is wearing leather pajamas. And Cardi B is the guest of honor between... Oh, she's direct support to Fit for an Autopsy.
Absolutely.
And she's going to stay... I'm going to add this. She's going to stay on stage for Fit's first song.
God damn right she is. And she's going to do a feature.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure to have you on the Downbeat. I've had fun. It got serious, and then
I don't know that there'll be a more lighthearted version of
the festival.
The festival thing.
I'm willing to try, and I love the juxtaposition.
Yeah.
I think, for what it's worth, you are an incredibly wise, just nice dude, and I'm very pleasured to know you.
Well, I love you. And I appreciate you having me. It's wonderful to be here.
And I can't go to your show because I'm going to see my parents.
Your mum.
And me dad.
And me dad.
What a fucking pleasure.
Thanks.
Check out What the Future Holds.
Yep.
What tours you got?
Right
this
now.
This is me supposed to be doing my job.
Yeah, we're supposed to do this.
Supposed to have already done this.
We are out on our headliner in Europe for the next 2.5 weeks. We will be hitting mainland Europe from the UK.
This is going to come out after that, so hit me with the summer.
Yeah. And then...
anything announced?
We don't have anything announced, but we do have... we are going to Australia, and then we do have a direct support tour that we're doing in September that I am so excited about, and I'll tell you about it after we get off of here. We did have... we were supposed to go to Japan, but it looks like that might get rescheduled. But we are searching for things right now. So keep your ears open. We are working, but September we will certainly be on tour in the States for sure. And we will be in Australia, I believe, in July.
Don't, before you fucking leak anything, let's just fucking...
Yeah, we'll call it right there.
Stay tuned. I'm about to find out what it is right now.